Welcome to the TWIML AI Podcast.
All right, everyone. I am on the line with Andreas Madsen. Andreas is an independent researcher based out of Copenhagen, Denmark. Andreas, welcome to the TWIML AI Podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to chat with you. I first came across your name as a result of a Medium post that you wrote about your experience becoming an independent researcher in the machine learning and AI field and ultimately getting published in ICLR with a spotlight paper. And we're going to dig into all of that here. But let's get started with you sharing a little bit about your background and what motivated your interest in ML and AI.
That's a long time ago, probably like 9 years ago, I think. I was reading a book called Programming Collective Intelligence. Like all the way back in high school, you would call it.
That's the O'Reilly book that talks about like collaborative filtering and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I was reading this, and at the time I wasn't really sure about what I would do for university. But after reading that, I mean, I read it again, and I just was really sure like this was the direction I wanted to go in. And so this was all the way before like machine learning really became like a popular subject. And particularly, I was at that point interested in how he did the natural language processing.
Okay.
Yeah, they used the non-negative matrix factorization. Which if you did that now, that will be really old-fashioned. But nevertheless, that was like how I got started. And then I did like applied mathematics at university, and I just took all the machine learning courses I could.
And so you kind of pursued machine learning independently, and in your blog post, you recommend that people avoid pursuing machine learning as independent researchers. Elaborate a little bit on your experience and why you make that recommendation.
I mean, if you just want to develop machine learning like in the industry and you don't necessarily want to do anything novel, as we call it, right, you can do that independently. I think that's totally fine. But if you want to do research, if you want to like develop new methods, then this is a really hard field to do it in, because you need like huge computational resources that you're not gonna have, and you'll probably also need to like collaborate with others who are really experts and who can stay up to date on like at least 300 papers a year, I suppose. And you're not gonna have like conversations with those kind of people, because you're just kind of alone, right? And also, research in itself is just a very frustrating experience for everybody. And also, sort of to go through that alone without having like PhD colleagues or such, I think is not that healthy, like mentally. just to be kind.
Mentally taxing just because of the isolation.
Exactly. Like, it's not that I don't have friends that I talk to, right? But they're not in the research business, right? So maybe they cannot really empathize with how it feels to get rejected after 7 years or 7 months of writing a paper on your own funding, right?
And so when you started to do this, when you set out as an independent researcher, was that coming right out of university or graduate school, or did you leave a job to do this? Where were you coming from?
Right, I finished like 2.5 years ago, and right after that, I started as kind of like a freelancer at this company called Nearform that basically just do like open source JavaScript. They're really good at that. And at the time, I was kind of like fed up with academia, and I didn't want to do a PhD at that point. I finished my master, just for context. Yeah, and I had this opportunity that was like very perfect for me in terms of my skills, and in that sense, I could get paid quite a lot. And I didn't quite know what I wanted to do next, so doing this for like 3 or 6 months was kind of perfect for me.
This was the JavaScript freelancing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like you're talking about creating like a profiling tool for programs or JavaScript programs. So it's not like your typical kind of JavaScript is. And then after that, they were like, okay, like this part is great. Do you want to do another 6 months sort of focusing on machine learning projects that are sort of minor? And then I did that for 6 months, and that was then the end of it, because it didn't really materialize into them getting a client. They were an outsourcing company, just to give some context. And that was sort of also what I expected. So during that time, I had already been working on this paper here called Visualizing Memorization in Recurrent Neural Networks. That was also one of the projects I did for them. I just proposed this, just write a paper as a, like, marketing effort. So it's been like 1 month on that with them, and then I just finished it on my own time after that. I thought after that I got published in the Still with this paper here, I thought like I would have a chance at getting like a research software engineer position where you kind of do both engineering and machine learning research, because I felt like I was a good mix of both. But that turned out to be really difficult. Then I looked into getting PhD positions or into PhD programs, because that's sort of the unwritten requirement. And this was where I was told, like, this publication you have right now is not enough. You need to have like at least one top tier publication, right? Or a publication in like a top venue conference.
Right. And this was someone telling you that you needed the publication in the top tier conference to to get a top advisor, right?
No, not necessarily a top advisor.
What was the context for that statement?
I talked to like five different professors from different universities, and they were like, oh, yeah, it's like really competitive. It's not that you're going to be more qualified, like, or your abilities will be that much greater because you had this publication. Is just, you know, that is the field that they use, because they get like 1,000 applications. And so that's really just the harsh reality.
And so in spite of being a little fed up with academia, you embarked on, you know, what is in many ways an academic pursuit to pursue research independently, push your paper and your ideas a little bit further. How did you get from the mapping or visualizing paper to the neural arithmetic unit idea?
I talked to an assistant researcher at the Technical University of Denmark here that I live quite close to. It was like at a opening for a foundation, I think. And he was just talking like, if you're interested in doing some kind of research, maybe we can collaborate on that. And so I wrote to him, and we just talked about different kind of projects. And I felt this project here was kind of like in my wheelhouse, because I had already done quite a lot of optimization work, not research, but done a lot of study in that field.
Well, some of the comments that you got suggest that, you know, it's not necessarily easy to find a willing collaborator if you don't have that credential. So you kind of lucked out there, maybe?
I mean, he's not a professor. He's not even in a PhD program, right?
Okay.
he's just sort of assisting students with their master thesis and stuff like that, right?
Got it.
And doing a course they were running, they were trying to reproduce this paper here that we will probably talk about, NALO, neural arithmetic logic units. And they were really struggling to that, and like nobody could reproduce it consistently. And so he thought that might be an interesting research subject. So I think like, yes, I did log out a bit, but not that much, I think.
Okay. So what, you know, before we kind of jump into the topic of the paper, you know, you kind of suggest that this is a hard way to go, the kind of independent researcher life, but you were able to successfully get your paper written and accepted at ICLR. you know, what works for you? What if, you know, someone else wants to, you know, disavow your advice not to pursue this path, but, you know, is open to your advice on what to do if you do decide to go down this road, you know, what would that advice be?
I mean, you definitely need to collaborate, because you're not going to go out of university and be an expert at criticizing your own work. Mm-hmm. Even the ones that have been in the academia for like 10 years, I don't think are experts at that, right? Just inherently resistant to criticizing your own work, I think is a fundamental property of being human. And so you need to collaborate with somebody who can do that. It does not necessarily have to be a professor, I think. Like anybody who has experience reading machine learning papers and can criticize them, I think will suit just fine. And then I think like also have reasonable expectations. Like if you're going in with the expectation that there's like an 80% chance of success, like you're delusional. Like, sorry. Like the success rate in these conferences is like 20%, right? And you're probably going to have like less of a chance than that, because you don't have the resources everybody else have. And so you should expect to get rejected from your first submission, I think. And I was rejected. I first proposed this paper here to Neurolabs, right? I got rejected from that, and then I could use that peer review to improve the paper and then submit for iClear, and there we then got accepted. And even that, I think, is not a guarantee. Right? I mean, could also have been rejected there, could also have been less lucky with peer reviewers. We were very fortunate to have actually the same peer reviewers that we had from Neurolabs, who were very constructive and could see that we had made like really good progress. And I think also they themselves had also had like a few months to actually think about this work and also be able to think a bit more critical about the competing paper. It was also an open review, so he could sort of like comment on other people's reviews. Okay. It was also really helpful. So that's like almost once in a lifetime you get that kind of really constructive peer reviewer. Like again, like lucky there, I think.
So tell us a little bit about the paper. What's the motivation for the research?
Right. So it really comes down to very abstract problem, that is, neural networks are really good at interpolating. They can create very complex approximations, but they're not very good at extrapolating, right? It's a classic example with, for example, image recognition. You put in like a white pixel somewhere and suddenly it goes from being a zebra to being a couch, right? And that really comes down to neural networks are not very good at extrapolating.
And what specifically do you mean by that? Because in a lot of ways, extrapolating is, you know, what we expect machine learning to do, like make predictions based on data that it's seen. That's kind of extrapolation.
It's probably interpolation, right? Well, you're seeing pictures of zebras before, but there never been like a dead pixel in any of these pictures here. So it's familiar with the concept of zebras, but it's not familiar with the concept of a dead pixel. Right, and that's really where you go from interpolation, like this is just another picture of a zebra that is never seen before, that's interpolation. But as soon as you add like a dead pixel, then you're now into a new realm of extrapolation. And it's not an easy concept, I think, to understand when do you go from interpolation to extrapolation. But mathematically, at least, there's no reason to expect the neural network to perform well on extrapolation tasks.
And so the research was on what, measuring networks' ability to do extrapolation or coming up with methods that help them to do extrapolation?
Right. So what this DeepMind paper here by Andrew Trask et al., the NALO paper, proposes is to look at like a subset of problems where the underlying problem has some fundamental arithmetic to it. So some combination of addition and multiplication, let's say. And that you will have, for example, in physical models, in financial models, or some question answering models, like what is 3 times 5? And given that assumption, can you then develop a null unit, similar to, for example, LSTM, but in this case for like arithmetic extrapolation, that given the training data can actually work on numerical values that is outside of the training distribution. And so that's the central problem here. And then there's the DeepMind paper, Nalo, that they propose one solution. We then find that this does not converge very consistently. So it does work sometimes, but if you train in like 100 different seeds, then it might only work on 10 or one of those seeds. And what we are doing is then to improve that consistency such that it works on almost all of the seeds, like 99 out of 100.
How did you go about doing that?
Right. I think like the Nalo paper is a very empirical paper. It just proposes this model here. It doesn't really give any kind of explanation behind why it looks exactly like this. And then it evaluates that on seven different tasks. And so a lot of the typical mathematical analysis you might put into proposing a new unit wasn't really done. So even simple things like how do you initialize the weights was a question that was not answered. And probably not analyzed. And so what we looked at is, for example, initialization, as I mentioned, also gradients. You can also just plot like the loss space. If there's some odd behavior here, in this case, we found like big area of singularities around global minimas. So that's to really give you an indication that something going wrong. Also redundant parameters can also be a problem when optimizing, like if you can somehow simplify these units while still achieving the same things, maybe that's then easier to optimize. And so these are all the properties we looked at, just analyzed them one by one, and then we sort of identified that these are problematic areas. And that's really the easy part. Then the hard part is then to come up with a new unit that doesn't have these issues. There was different components to this Nalo unit here. So there's like a part that can do additions, part that can do multiplications, and then they have like a gaining unit that can switch between these two parts here. And what we also did was we, for example, could say, okay, let's just say it's a multiplication problem. We fix the gating to always choose multiplication. How well does that improve anything? And so this is what you probably call like an ablaisance study, where you remove some of the complexity and then you see if it still works or if it works better. And there we also, for example, find that the gating mechanism that they're using really doesn't work as it should. It more or less just chooses either addition or multiplication randomly, independent of what the actual problem is.
That doesn't sound like what you'd want it to do.
No, of course. Things should converge dependent on your data.
And so you develop this unit with kind of a different arrangement of gates. Is that the general idea?
We actually skipped the gating problem. So this is still unsolved. Write to me if you want to solve it. And then we just focused on getting multiplication to work more consistently, because that only converged like 30% of the times. That I will say our primary contribution.
So does that mean you punted on the arithmetic problem, or did you do that independently but the network didn't have to choose which one it was doing?
Like we said, okay, you have to do multiplication or you have to do addition. It didn't like understand that itself.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Which turns out to be a hard enough problem in itself. Yeah, like what was happening before was really just it chose like randomly, and then you know, if you train on enough different seeds, then one of the times it's going to hit the right thing. Yeah, and our idea here was essentially to make it more linear. Linear functions, or at least partially linear functions, are typically more easy to optimize than very nonlinear function. So the Nalo function is essentially a exponential function, so it has like x to the power of your weight W. And then if W is 0, then it's not selected. And if W is 1, then you multiply. And where, in our case, we replace that concept with essentially a gating mechanism between 1 and X. a linear gating mechanism. And so this is easier to optimize because it's more linear.
And so did you also apply this to a variety of different benchmark tasks, or were you strictly evaluating performance on kind of this mathematical operation?
Right. So the Nello paper proposes, I think, 6 or 7 different tasks. And I mean, I'll just be honest here. Most of those tasks are not relevant to what they're actually solving, because they do not test extrapolation and they do not test multiplication. Mm-hmm. Only one of those 7 tasks actually test extrapolation on multiplication. And so that is a task we benchmarked on. And that is quite a simple task. So we also took one of the other tasks they had, and then we modified that a bit so it would also test multiplication instead of only addition.
And so how are these tasks set up?
It's pretty simple. You have like one part that is like you have 100 different inputs, and then you take 2 subsets of this input here, and then you sum that together. Now you have 2 numbers. And then you multiply those 2 numbers, and that's your target. And then this is pretty easy to test extrapolation on, because then you just sample your input from a different range than you trained on. And then we have a more complex task because, well, you can show that this works really well, but what if you had this in the context of a more complex neural network, then maybe it wouldn't converge. And so what we did was we also looked at MNIST numbers, where we take like a sequence of MNIST numbers, for example, and then we try and add them together or multiply them together. And then, of course, you need like a convolutional neural network to translate the image to a number. And then you have our unit to then translate those numbers or multiply those numbers.
Presumably, the problems are set up as supervised problems. So you're training on... you said in the case of the first task, a different range of the inputs, and then you're running, you're testing against a range that the...
Yeah, these are supervised regression problems.
Yeah, how do you ultimately perform on the various tests?
I mean, we perform quite a bit better, so...
What's the right way to even measure performance on these kinds of tasks?
Right. So that I think is a very good and central question, because there's not been a lot of work in extrapolation. And we actually did 2 papers in this, a workshop paper in NeuroLabs, and where we actually just discuss how do you evaluate this, and then our iClear paper where we improve the model. And I think the fundamental idea you need to have, so the Nello paper is they just evaluated on one seed, and they just show the mean squared error. And mean squared errors are great for comparing is this model better than this model, but that is not really what's interesting here. Because if you truly can extrapolate, that means you've found the perfect solution. You've completely solved the problem. And you should have a mean squared error that is very close to 0. Whatever error that is left is really just due to like computer precision.
If you fully solve the problem.
Yeah, exactly. What the Nello people did was they compared this to a Rainer model. And as you can imagine, a Rainer model can have quite a big error, especially if you multiply different numbers. The target becomes like a million, and then you have a Rainer model that produces something that's a million of that, and then you square that, and now suddenly you have like a really big error, right? And so comparing relative to this Rainer model doesn't really make sense. And so what we did instead is compare to a nearly perfect model. So we simply just like develop the perfect model, and then we add like a little epsilon to the weights. And then we use that as a threshold for what the mean squared error should be. And that's sort of our success criteria. And once you have the success criteria, then you can just do this 100 times on 100 different seeds. And then you can measure the success rate.
Okay, I'm not sure I'm following the process here. So you said you are comparing to a nearly perfect model. I mean, the nearly perfect model is what you're trying to figure out in the first place. And you have you know the absolute answer for multiplying the numbers. Right. Where does this nearly perfect model come from?
Well, it's really just the absolute value, as you call it, from multiplying the numbers, like plus an epsilon.
Got it. So you're taking the result that you know to be true and adding some noise to it, and you're training against that.
Exactly. Now, this epsilon here, you of course need to adjust to reflect the number of operations actually needed to perform this calculation.
And why do you add the noise in the first place? Well, how does that help your model converge? Presumably, that's why.
Oh, no, it's not added to the problem itself.
No, it's added to the
criteria.
Oh, okay.
Or the time, like what you actually like, you get some mean squared error, and that's very close to zero. like let's say.
But is this you're not adding this in your? Or are you adding this in like your loss function, or is it just after you train the model in the way you present the results?
It's just a way of evaluating like the results. Like you need to compare the mean squared error to something. You cannot compare it to zero because it's never gonna be zero.
Right.
And so you need to compare it to some epsilon. And in order to compute that epsilon, you essentially just run a perfect model on the problem. Except it's not a perfect model. It has like a really tiny error, and then you get a really tiny mean squared error, and that's what you compare against.
Besides the Nalu paper, are there other results that were out there to compare against, or was that the kind of state of the art in this space?
It's a very new field, so that is the state of the art. There are other papers that are sort of also doing arithmetics, or for example, neural GPU. It's kind of a popular paper. In that paper, they're trying to learn algorithms. So that's a bit different. And also, they don't focus on extrapolation, I believe. But that's like the most similar.
Okay.
But really, it is just that paper. Yeah, that's also a part that made it attractive for me to research, because I didn't need to spend like half a year just understanding the background.
Yeah. What are kind of your next steps beyond this paper?
Right now, I'm just focused on trying to get into more permanent situation, a PhD program or a job or something similar. Mm-hmm. That's sort of my focus right now. Then I'm doing a collaboration with one from DeepMind on like what will probably be a small workshop paper.
But not Andrew Trask?
Not Andrew Trask, no.
Okay. You have interviewed before on the podcast, incidentally. It was at NeurIPS a couple of years ago, I think.
Oh, okay.
But we talked about his privacy stuff and open mind and not any of this.
Yeah, he really went public on that this year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to get more into interpretability. I think that's a really important problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're creating all these very complex models here, but can we rely on them actually working? And so this sort of already is around what I'm already working on. Like I did the visualization of memorization, that is in part interpretability, and also my work here relating to Nalu is also about extrapolation, which is essentially about like, can you trust that this model is also going to work once it sees data that it has not seen before? And this is something I wanted to do for a long time, but I was always discouraged from pursuing it when I was at university, because it didn't really feel like you could publish in the big conferences on that subject. But then I was at NeurLabs 2019, because I did a workshop publication, and saw this talk here by Bing Kim from Google. And I think she really like illustrated for me that it is possible to do like high quality research in this area here and get published at conferences that are useful for your career. And so that is really what I kind of want to pursue.
But preferably with an organization, you know, whether academic or industry, as opposed to independent.
Yeah, preferably.
So you did it, you wouldn't recommend it, and you're taking your own advice.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, Andreas, thanks so much for taking the time to share a little bit about your journey and research.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, everyone, that's our show for today. For more information on today's show, visit twimmelai.com/shows. As always, thanks so much for listening and catch you next time.